Aaron Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm in the studio with Rob Sheffield and Brittany Spanos. We thought it was a good time to talk about 2018 in pop. Last week we did 2018 in hip-hop. It's been kind of a weird year in pop. You know, defining pop gets kind of hard, but it's definitely a you-know-it-when-you-see-it kind of thing. And Brittany, we were talking yesterday, and you said it's been kind of like a weird year, off year in pop.
Yeah, there hasn't been as many big albums from, like, legacy pop artists this year. I mean, legacy in the sense of, like, have kind of dominated pop over the last, like, decade or so even. And also just, like, not a really big pop event year. There's been a lot of great albums, I think, and a lot of career-making albums from newer artists, younger artists, artists that are kind of just now seeing their career sort of evolving in a way where an album can be called their best. But yeah, not a lot of big pop events. I feel like all the big music events have been happening in rap.
Yeah, and we were saying that in some ways the year in pop is, you know, in part the year in Ariana Grande, for
yes.
Sure. And a few, you know, Camila Cabello had an amazing year, and that was a big one. Kacey Musgraves made a beautiful album that won Best Country Album, but, it, you know, it's pretty much a pop album.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, how do you see this year? How would you define this year, broadly speaking, in pop?
A lot of hits, sort of a transitional period in terms of a lot of, like Brittany said, a lot of the legacy artists were kind of sitting it out, and a lot of the new contenders for the throne kind of really stepped up. And so it was just a fantastic year for pop hits, really from everywhere.
Mm-hmm. What were some of your favorites, if you want to throw that out, and maybe we can play some of them?
Well, honestly, since you brought up Ariana already, like,
right.
Thank You Next is such a... Understand that for expectations for Thank You Next, I would have been happy with a lot less. I was kind of expecting it was going to be funny little trivial shade released overnight, and we'd all, like, snicker about it the next day and then forget about it. It turned out to be this amazing statement. I think of it as her Plastic Ono band, really. She's, you know, she doesn't believe in the sweetener narrative that she spent the year sort of, like... building. So it's kind of a beautiful and mature and wise and generous sort of statement that, honestly, that wasn't what I was looking for. That's not what I go to Ariana Grande for. I was looking for a little petty salt, and instead I got something that makes me reevaluate my life.
Mm-hmm.
The Lennon analogy kind of gets really messy, though, because it's more like he recorded Oh Yoko and then was like, oh, never mind Yoko the next year or something. Like, it's in some ways the gap between hope and reality of this year can be measured by the distance between the song Pete Davidson on Sweetener by Ariana Grande and then Thank You Next, because we all hoped that this year would work out better, but you know, we're all just, like, rediscovering ourselves after it turned out not how we wanted.
Plastic Ono Band was just a year after Abbey Road, so in many ways Thank You Next is his god, you know, like you could say that Paul taught him love and George taught him patience and Ringo taught him pain.
Let's continue this in as strained a manner as possible for about 40 minutes. But, well, let's hear.
I don't believe in Pete Davidson. Yeah.
Who does?
Yeah.
I do, actually. But let's hear the song Pete Davidson, a little burst of hope towards the end of Ariana's album.
Universe must have my back, fell from the sky into my lap. And I know you know that you my soulmate and all that. I'm like, ooh.
And I will say that there's a lovely line on The Light Is Coming by Ariana, which The Light Is Coming to Take Back Everything the Darkness Stole, I think is the line. It's like weirdly Leonard Cohen-esque for a pop album, you know? I'm waiting for someone to just quote it, tweet it and be like, dash Leonard Cohen, you know? Just see how many people retweet it. Thank you, Leonard, for your genius. Like, but actually, let's hear that bit from The Light Is Coming by Ariana Grande.
I bet Leonard Cohen wishes he came up with the song title God Is a Woman. Somewhere Leonard Cohen is going, damn, like 80 years and I didn't think of that one.
I do like to think about Leonard Cohen at one of those songwriting boot camps for a pop album. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
I need about 12 more verses.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll be back in 3 years.
Yes.
I mean, the Ariana Pete thing was fun. It was fun. Yeah. It was like one of our most fun distractions in a very, very messed up year, I would say.
I mean, like, one of the most peak millennial, and saying that in verbal air quotations, relationships that you can ever have. I mean, it's just like, it was so perfect the way it completely maneuvered through the year. Like, it was happening so fast. No one believed in them. Then all of a sudden, we all loved them. And we were so excited for them to get married. Like, I was genuinely rooting for their wedding. And, like, I loved the song Pete Davidson. It's one of my favorite songs on the album, on Sweetener. And then they break up so suddenly. And then we get one of the best breakup songs of the year. It's just honestly the entire, and all of it happened in like 6 months.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. I have to say, it's one of the best breakup songs of all time. This is a song that I listen to and I think, why didn't this song exist when I was 19? It's one of those things that keeps me fascinated about pop music, that every year stuff happens that has never happened before. And the fact that Ariana Grande has such a bold, sweeping philosophical statement when we all would have been happy with just a little dirt, you know? Like, that song really just completely blows me away.
Yeah.
One of our hip-hop writers, Charles Holmes, pointed out in his mind that Ariana is basically the only pop star to figure out how to maneuver the current media and social media environment like a rapper. Mm-hmm. That she moves off news, she's able to... I mean, he said that Thank You Next was released off a beef, which Britney disagreed with when I brought it to her, but it still, it came out of... She released it very cleverly in the wake of a little exchange over actually a very funny Saturday Night Live promo. It's, by the way, the only controversy in the history of media that involved a Saturday Night Live promo.
But she released it on a Saturday night.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
So, she released it a half hour before Saturday Night Live aired.
So in the promo.
The coldest of cold opens.
Hi, I'm Jonah Hill, and I'm hosting Saturday Night Live this week with musical guest Maggie Rogers.
Hey, Maggie. I'm Pete.
Hey, Pete.
You want to get married?
No.
Over three.
So basically, that was Pete Davidson talking to a rising pop star of sorts, Maggie Rogers. And Ariana did not like that. They supposedly, if you believe TMZ or whatever, they supposedly then cut a bit of Pete talking or joking about Ariana from that episode. And from then on, he's being quiet about it. But then that's when she released her song. So in that sense, it's quote unquote off a beef. She was smart enough to have the song ready. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and she maneuvers quickly. And it's she's already on to her next album. That's kind of like a rapper. She's moving really fast. She does seem super savvy. And I think, as we said before, she's also, the album was coming off this awful tragedy, this horror of people being killed at one of her shows by a terrorist. And just sort of threading that needle of how to come up with an appropriate set of pop songs in the wake of something like that is nearly impossible. And she threaded that and then went on to have a, you know, and then of course she's had a crazy year. I mean, Mac Miller died, her ex-boyfriend. We did a whole episode about Mac. And so the life of Ariana Grande is a very eventful one, and not due to her machinations at all. It's just it's just a crazy life she's had.
I mean, to even contextualize her more just in this idea of her career, I mean, when she first started out, she had a Broadway history. She had Nickelodeon history. I think people thought of her. She got a lot of young Mariah Carey comparisons. And I think people were expecting her to just go into the big vocalist route and kind of do a lot of songs that only primarily showed off her range, only primarily showed off the fact that she can, you know, just belt with the best of them. And I think people thought that after such a tragedy that Manchester was, they were expecting probably that kind of big, booming, ballad, sad album from her. And instead, she was like, I'm 25. Trying to make the best of this really terrible thing that happened to me, to my fans, to everyone that was, you know, affected by this tragedy. I got my heart broken. I fell in love. I'm going to make this album that's called Sweetener because it's meant to lighten this dark situation, and then even continue to surprise us more. And I think it was interesting that she completely rerouted her career this year. I think people weren't expecting her to make an album as good as Sweetener was, but also make an album that was as fun as it was.
Yeah.
We're kind of all thinking that it would probably be a little bit of a dark album, a little bit more, you know, serious. And I think there was a lot of moments where she addressed anxiety and what happened and the trauma that she experienced after such an event like that. And she said it in such a relatable way. And even on social media, the way she talks about it, she details kind of the struggles of experiencing the hate that she would see after the breakup with Mac Miller and also the death of Mac Miller. And she talked about dealing with anxiety after breaking up with Pete Davidson and all of these things. And Thank You Next feels like the logical culmination of that honesty that she's given us this year, and also of that kind of authentic version of herself that wasn't a staged version, that wasn't the idea of what Ariana Grande is meant to be as a pop star.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. The other thing, and I'll approach this delicately, which is her initial reputation was that she was somehow unlikable. There were a lot of sort of bad rumors about her backstage behavior. Mm-hmm. there was the infamous donut licking incident, which I once had to explain to Future, the rapper Future. I forgot how it came up, but he was like, "What?" Like I was like, "Well, she licked a donut." "She licked a donut," and and no matter how many times he couldn't really quite see where the scandal was or what happened. It was just sort of that conversation didn't. It was hard. But there was this general sense that she had this sort of, and I think she probably has a little bit of like a spiky personality. Mm-hmm. She's not some like smiley, friendly pop star. I think she did have sort of some quote unquote diva tendencies very early on. She was definitely only being photographed from one side and stuff like that, very, like way too early in the eyes of people. But it's also like, I think now in an age when we're just rethinking our sort of the tropes and the way we kind of analyze these things, it might suit her better now to not be like just this like boring, nice person. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying she's a mean person or a bad person, but I think she's like a regular person with probably like an edge to her. I think she has an edge to her.
And I think there's also, I love her first three albums. I think they're really solid pop albums. I think there were a lot of voice finding, obviously, like they were coming right off of being on Nickelodeon. I think the first one was released while she was still on a Nickelodeon show. Yeah. So I think there was a lot of kind of gauging what she can be and who she is and like trying not to be too like jumping off this kind of family friendly career into her more adult pop career. I think there was a lot of her kind of trying to find herself. I know like Dangerous Woman, which was the album right before Sweetener, there was a lot of different genres happening and a lot of her finding her voice and finding her footing as a pop artist. Because it was like, where does she fit? I think there's this really great vocalist, and I think there's also this desire to be a really current, fresh pop star who makes hits like Thank You Next turned out to be. And I think there was a lot of her trying to figure out where she fit into this world. And so, I think there was kind of the diva thing felt like the most logical public persona.
Well, and as you were saying before, she, she was sort of forced to grow up in public, mm-hmm. partly because of the, the horrible atrocity in Manchester, that sort of the trajectory for whatever she could have had planned for the next phase was not an option for her, and that she really kind of was forced to acquire this kind of gravitas, and that she handled it so gracefully is certainly beyond, I was a huge fan. It was beyond what I thought she was capable of.
Yeah.
I will say, you're absolutely right. She found her style.
Yeah.
And it's like, you could tell from the beginning of No Tears Left to Cry. Mm-hmm. I think I've even said this on the show before. That moment when it transitions, I guess, did that come out at the end of last year? Was that? I can't even remember.
This year.
Okay. So, that moment when it transitions is like, that's a legendary pop moment. It's completely irresistible. So let's hear that, the very beginning of that song.
Right now.
And even that plays with the notion of she's going to release a big ballad.
Yes, exactly.
And like, when you first hear it, it sounds like this, like, it's going to be this big kind of like ballad about coming out of this darkness and coming out of this like really, just crying a lot. And all of a sudden you have no tears left to cry. And then we get a banger.
Yeah.
A banger was born.
It begins out of nowhere to slap. So you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm Brian Hyde. I'm in the studio with Brittany Spanos and Rob Sheffield, and we're talking about 2018 in pop, and we'll be right back with more.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Brian Hyatt, and you're listening to Rolling Stone Music Now. I'm in the studio with Rob Sheffield and Brittany Spanos. We're talking about 2018 in pop. We talked about Ariana Grande. Let's talk about Camila Cabello. She is the year's breakout pop star. She was the opening act for Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. on at least a bunch of the stadium tour. I don't know
how much.
American. Yeah,
League,
the North American. And she absolutely killed as an opening act. That is not an easy gig in broad daylight in a stadium to a bunch of, and it's the youngest segment of her fans are often the ones who were there early. She had Havana to kind of buoy her. But even beyond that, like, she just, people could know nothing about her and watch that performance and come away like a fan. And I think that's when I was fully won over to her as like, okay, this is a superstar in the making, because her personality just came through so strongly. She did so many smart things. She covered Can't Help Falling in Love, like just little things you'd never expect.
The other people who are there earlier are the youngest fans and the parents.
The parents. Yeah.
So like, yeah. That was super smart crowd work.
Yeah, no, just smart stuff. And she was so assured in that slot, because again, that is just the worst slot. It's just, you're just in broad daylight, you can see people streaming in with their popcorn. It's just, it sucks. Weirdly, my mind went to, I was like, when have I seen people in that slot? And then my mind went to went to Counting Crows opening up for the Rolling Stones in like 1994.
That is the most Brian comment of all time. Yeah. You are so on brand right now. That, oh my God.
Camilo did much better in this scenario. That's what I'll say. I will say that. Sorry, Adam Duritz. Yeah, but I mean, in general, she made a great album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Camila is great. I mean, such a solid debut album. And I think she spent most of 2017 releasing songs and trying to find like what her deal would be as a solo artist coming off of Fifth Harmony and, you know, trying to figure out what her songwriting voice was, trying to figure out what kind of style of music she'd even make. Like, who as a pop star would she be? What would kind of break? And Havana, fittingly, the song that she loved the most, that felt like the greatest distillation of her history, of her personality, of her ability as a pop star and a songwriter, as a singer, that all came through and turned out to be a great, huge hit for her, and also determined the path of her debut album, which feels really solid and has a lot of, especially for a debut album coming off of a big pop group, to make such a solid one. It was great.
And Never Be the Same, which is, we talked a little bit about it we did an entire episode about Camila, but Never Be the Same, which is kind of a pseudo rock song in some ways, is a huge song too. Huge. Like, yeah. It's, you know, and so.
One of the best pronunciations of the year, Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween. Yes. I very much like the not knowing how to pronounce heroin. I applaud that social responsibility move. But also, it's such a weird song. It's funny. It reminds me of the specific Brian Eno solo album from the 70s, Another Green World. And just like...
Now who's on brand? Come on.
Yeah, sorry. But it's a very strange song, and you hear it, and there's so many different types of ways of thinking about pop music going into that song. Yeah. And it's such a brilliant thing, especially for a debut album. Something about Camila, I guess I always keep remembering how young she is, because, you know, she's been around for so many years with Fifth Harmony. So I kind of thought that she was more of the voice finding on this album, which she does in such a thrilling way, is really is part of the appeal.
I'm still laughing because I'm trying to decide which is more absurd, the comparison you made or the comparison I made. But I do know what you mean.
You were talking to her, you had that great interview with her when she was making this album, and she gave you some hilariously long title. I forget what the long title was.
Oh my God, I don't even remember. So there was an original title that was like the healing, the hurting, the loving.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Which was the original. She's also like, she's like a pop punk emo kid. So like, it was a very peak 2007 Fueled by Ramen title for an album. But yeah, and it started like, the first single that she released was Crying in the Club, which was, I think, very good. But I think it was like, that was her trying to find her, who she was as a pop star, like her entire vibe as a pop star. And it was very emo. It was a very emo start.
That was what was interesting. And it was definitely Britney's piece. Like, she switched gears. She's like, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make something that's less wallowing in something and something fresher. And I think clearly the right move.
Yeah. And because Havana was released the same day as OMG with Quavo. And they were two very, very different songs. She dropped them both. I think this was around like August or September, before she had kind of figured out the direction of her debut album. And OMG was just like very, very like trap pop, very, you know, like anyone could have sung that song. But Havana, no, like, it just sounds so totally her and sounds so great and so simple and so different than everything else you heard on radio. And so it was very clear that it took that song to really be like, okay, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to release.
Yeah, OMG would have been kind of a disastrous direction for her, I think.
Oh, yeah.
So let's actually hear OMG to get a sense of, you know, it's just sort of trap pop. It was whatever.
Baby, what you say? I ain't here to conversate. Baby, I don't play. From Miami, causing trouble in LA.
And then let's hear Never Be the Same, because we were talking about that.
Suddenly, I'm a fiend, and you're all of me, all of me.
again, it's obvious, and we've talked about it before, but it's just very nice and appropriate that an immigrant from Cuba would be someone who talks about it proudly and has written about it would be the sort of premier breaking pop star of 2018. Feels very appropriate, mm-hmm. and very, you know, that's kind of how it should be.
Yeah.
I love the moment on the Grammy Awards where she was introducing U2 and they were, yes, at the Statue of Liberty doing their song about immigration. And I'm like, literally everybody watching this, definitely including Bono, thinks that maybe it should have been Bono introducing Camila. But it was just a beautiful sort of moment of like different schools of pop music operating on the same level.
And Bono, I think, sent flowers to both her and, yes, Cardi B. Two, right, great pop stories of the year.
Absolutely. Bono knows what time it is. But Havana, also a song that, you know, that we've all been hearing constantly for over a year now. It the staying power of that song and the stamina of that song. There's just so much going on in it musically and emotionally. It's really kind of just a epical hit.
And it's so catchy without getting annoying. Like, I feel like, yeah, I can just hear it for decades to come and just like never turn it off, yeah, and never be sick of hearing it.
Yeah. and such a melancholic song, but like a song that also, you know, lifts you up rhythmically. It's,
yeah,
just a really astonishingly durable pop hit. Just,
yeah,
you know, one that we are not going to get sick of anytime,
mm-mm,
soon.
And she'll be around for a while. I think that's pretty clear.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So sort of bubbling under is the return of Carly Rae Jepsen. And there's a lot to talk about with Carly Rae Jepsen because some people, many people, I would say the majority of people, think of Carly Rae Jepsen as a one-hit wonder. She has essentially two careers. She's in the big, vast mainstream. She's a one-hit wonder, someone who had the song Call Me Maybe and then essentially disappeared to the sort of mainstream. However, there is another Carly Rae Jepsen. The other Carly Rae Jepsen is beloved for making a series of, I guess, what we might call bops. You know, her album Emotion is a profoundly beloved album for her fans who are kind of a deeper level of pop fan. And I think Rob once called her artisanal pop. It's for people who need a little bit more of a handmade touch to their pop. But no, I mean, she has a new album coming out actually in March, I believe, or next year. I don't know exactly when. We can say we heard a few songs from it that are unreleased and they're really good. But the song that came out is Party for One, mm-hmm, right? And
a bop in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
In the Cyndi Lauper sense.
Yeah. And I was saying that you could link it to the moment in Ariana's song in Thank You Next when she's like, basically, I met someone new, her name is Ari, and blah, 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 like self-love, even though I think, you know, this is a different kind of self-love in the Carly song. But it does say something maybe about the turn 2018 is, yeah, taking. I don't know.
Banger's about being alone.
What was that Fifth Harmony song? Like, oh, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to my reflection.
Oh, yes.
Like, Camila was there at the start of this trend. But yeah, at a time when, you know, female pop stars are pop stars at this point, it's a theme where really overt self-love and self-praise, mm-hmm, is, you know, is a politically and culturally very resonant move.
And reinventing it too. I think making it just like reinventing what female empowerment even is in pop and like what we do with it and trying to make it a lot more internal and making that kind of internal statement about yourself and having that reflect off to kind of the greater population.
Yeah. Mm.
It's also like in an age when it's universally agreed that many, many men really suck. It's sort of like if you're a heterosexual woman, it's maybe just like, just leave me alone. Like yeah, maybe it's just like, that's sort of a little bit of the subtext too, right?
Yeah, bangers about being alone.
Yeah.
No bangers about, you know, love songs this, yeah, year. It was not a year for pop songs that are love songs.
Only
was
about Pete Davidson.
Pete Davidson was the last chance for men.
We needed one man to root for, and Pete Davidson failed us.
Damn it, Pete.
Well, you know, this was a theme through the year, and that for Ariana, sort of like, you know, living out that whole story in terms of songs, and the fact that these are great songs that she's making about it is why we care about it. It's not like any of us care about Pete Davidson, like, as, mm-hmm, you know, but, you know, responding to the rise and fall of an extremely abrupt relationship that she was able to make that, you know, as Brittany said, a very relatable theme.
Yeah. And also there's a lot of just like internal kind of self-care, you know, mental health work being done in pop this year. And I mean, again, Ariana's album with Breathe In and a lot of the songs kind of dealing with anxiety and mental health. In My Blood by Shawn Mendes, also about the same topic. Like, I think a lot of people were trying to find ways to talk about themselves, taking care of themselves, and then also making it kind of a greater, more universal topic.
And Carly is like, taking care of or something. Yes. Yeah. So let's hear Party for One. If you don't care about me, I just dance for myself. Let's talk about the boys who would be John Mayer, because you mentioned Shawn Mendes.
Yes.
John Mayercore is a very unexpected development.
Yeah.
That John Mayer, and we had a little piece on this in the Hot Issue, John Mayer has become a hero and a guiding light for a new generation.
People really love John Mayer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit.
I don't get it. But Shawn Mendes and Halsey really are like kind of the top two right now. And Charlie Puth, like a lot of the male pop stars really, really love John Mayer.
He's hardly qualifies as one of the people influenced by it, but I was in a car with the rapper Machine Gun Kelly, and we were driving actually to, you know, it's a nice story. He was driving to meet an injured fan. We drove like an hour and a half out of his way to do it. This is all really nice. But I was doing a feature on it, and at one point he started putting on John Mayer song after John Mayer song. And I was just like, and for him, it was just like that, you know, it's a legend.
Yeah.
And it was actually, it was from Continuum, this stuff, which was the album I did a John Mayer feature on back in the day, and is the reason John doesn't talk to me. We'll get over it someday. It's a good piece, though. You should look it up. But anyway, he's in that time, that was like 2006 or whatever, he's become a symbol for sort of sensitive male songwriting paired with perhaps tasty blues licks, and just, you know, for someone like Shawn Mendes, he's an absolute idol. And then, you know, even Niall Horan from One Direction, that's he's definitely a Mayercore guy as well, and he's been on tour.
Yeah, I think he's become like a huge mentor for a lot of young artists as well, not beyond just like being an influence for them, but he's been working with a lot of younger artists, and I think kind of it seems like he's taken a step back to kind of help mold these artists as songwriters and producers and things like that in the studio, which is
also
pretty cool.
Like, and I think for just male pop stars, it's funny that male pop stars have taken over the like lonely kid with guitar archetype, which used to be, you know, a role reserved for the female pop stars. And as the female pop stars have left that behind, that's something that has become like, you know, almost the only path to be a male pop star.
Yeah, and the kind of the machismo of it has left. It's like very sensitive. It's a little bit more like, again, the same sort of internal struggles are being dealt with in the songs, the same sort of like kind of awareness of self-care is being dealt with in these songs, which is also a nice move for a lot of it.
Absolutely. I love the part of our new Shawn Mendes cover story by Patrick Doyle, where he's talking about his internal struggle over being Instagrammed with Taylor Swift putting glitter on him, which was like such a, and of course I read it thinking like, well, this is a strange thing to have an anxiety attack about.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it was like a really kind of, you know, that he's sort of thinking out loud about what it means to him to grow up and to be male, and the sort of the ways that he's thinking about it. It was an interesting, you know, that's sort of what a male pop star is doing now.
Yeah, and there's that great interview with Harry Styles and Timothée Chalamet where they talked about masculinity and their ideas of it and how they perceive themselves in sort of the history of toxic masculinity and trying to play with that. But I think, yeah, masculinity has played a big role in, and people's relationship with masculinity has played a huge role in pop this year.
Absolutely. And as always, One Direction were ahead of everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and in terms of like, you know, using the acoustic guitars, you mentioned Niall and Harry, like they have really sort of made that the template for, you know, for what a male pop star does.
Yeah.
Let's hear In My Blood by Shawn Mendes. Help me. It's like the walls are caving in. Sometimes I feel like giving up. And Mariah Carey came out with a new album, and it's really good. It's called Caution. Listening to it, you just know, like, oh my God, she's back.
Yeah.
It's crazy. How did she do that?
I mean, she worked with a lot of different producers. She worked with a lot of the people that work with artists like Drake. And so it feels really fresh. It also kind of has the really great Mariah snark to it. Like, she knows how to insult someone really well. And also very beautifully. And so it has a lot of that tone to the album, which is nice. And yeah, I think her songwriting's stronger than ever. I think she kind of like pulled back from trying too much to be like trend hopping. But yeah, it feels really good. Like, it feels like probably her best album since Emancipation for me.
Yeah, it feels current without feeling strained.
Yeah.
And it feels like her, instantaneously her. It's not like, oh, who is this? Not even for a second. You know exactly who you're listening to. We should listen to GTFO, which is the first track, and instantly establishes, like, has a sort of sass to it that's, like, pretty delightful. Help did you make of it, Rob? Were you surprised that she made such a strong album at this point?
Absolutely, yes. In an album that clearly she wanted to make and that she cared about a lot, it does remind me of Emancipation. It's it's a very sort of, in a way, out of line album for her to make, but that she was taking it really seriously is just a, you know, a surprise.
And I think she also played into a lot of the shifting narrative around her own public image. I think she's become sort of this weird social media icon, this huge meme. Like, obviously she loves that. She loves this idea that, like, people kind of, like, worship the most diva-esque stuff about her and, like, how she is kind of the premier diva of pop and R&B and everything. And so I think she's played into that.
Well, yeah, there's a self-awareness coming in, which is in some ways the thing you might least associate with her, you know, but it's there, you know.
At this point, I think maybe her New Year's Eve debacle, as it was perceived at the time, was the birth of the new Mariah.
Yes.
Might be like,
it was the crucible in which a new Mariah was born.
That she was just like standing there and just like, I don't like how this is going, so I'm not even going to jump in at any point in lip sync. I think in many ways, like, especially coming as it did at a crisis point for our nation, we look to Mariah now for cultural and moral leadership.
Mariah, she needed the tea and she gave us the tea.
She did.
You're framing it as a sort of Bartleby-esque refusal to participate.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
She really, like, she came back from that really strong. It could have been awful. And she really was like, she was like, I just needed tea. I just needed tea. And no one had tea for me.
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, I Don't Know Her is arguably more famous than any of her songs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, future generations might remember her as the New Year's Eve she wanted tea and didn't get tea, and that she doesn't know her.
So Lana Del Rey, as Brittany reminded us, doesn't have an album out yet, but it has is having a good year, and will have a good year next year, I imagine.
I mean, Venice Bitch is amazing. Mariner's Apartment Complex, even better. I mean, we were talking about Leonard Cohen earlier. I think they're very, like, Leonard Cohen was like, I'm going to write a bunch of pop songs. It would be those. It would be Mariner's Apartment Complex. It would be like this, like, weird memory about walking past an apartment of an ex's friend. Just so good.
Yeah. Those are both really sort. Do you like one of those songs better than the other?
I like Mariner's a lot
more.
Me
too, actually.
Yeah.
Let's hear that one.
You took my sadness out of context at the Mariner's Apartment Complex. I ain't no candle in the wind.
It also seems like another person who wouldn't expect to achieve self-awareness is achieving it.
And I think she's...
Sorry, I'm talking about her like she's an artificial intelligence.
I think she's finding a way to get that, like, nostalgia of her pop sound and really make it so over the top and really kind of campy. And also, I think she's growing stronger as a songwriter with every album. And I think this one... I'm really looking forward to what we're going to hear from this one. It's going to be with Jack Antonoff, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it, though.
Is the whole album with Jack Antonoff?
I don't know, actually. I know those two songs, I believe, are with him.
Can't wait for those rumors to start popping. So we did want to talk about Taylor Swift because, you know, just because her album didn't come out this year, she had the biggest tour of this year, a tour that people were like, oh, it's not selling out. And it turned out her strategy with the business strategy of selling tickets worked perfectly. It was enormous. The tour was a great success. And the song Delicate was everywhere. Great song.
It was everywhere. In terms of being ubiquitous in a way you want a pop hit to be ubiquitous, you hear it late at night in a cab or in a deli by yourself. It's one of those pop songs that you hear always at really super vulnerable moments, and it messes you up emotionally every single time.
Yeah.
Let's hear Delicate again. Pretend you're in a deli and hear Delicate now.
Dive bar on the east side, where you at? Phone lights at my nightstand in the black. Come here, you can meet me in the back.
The deli bop is a very specific kind of bop.
Yeah, and the one you hear in the wild, that's the thing, like, you know, Delicate is a song I can play at home 20 times in a row and, like, sing along and isn't it along with it. But it's funny that it's a song that, in terms of pop songs that you hear in the wild all year long, and it always catches you at a moment where it's like, oh, man, a song that really gives you the read that you didn't necessarily want. To me, that's a song that kept doing that all year.
Yeah, and it was kind of a sleeper pop hit, too. I think it didn't become, I think it hit number one on the pop charts, or at least, like, top five, like, in June or July or something. Like, it was, like, way after the album came out, way after she had dropped it as a single. And it just sort of stuck around for so long and then ended up becoming like an accidental pop hit for her.
Because it's just so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and
it's so good. Yes.
It was so good that it overcame whatever will was out there, but like, no, we want this weird sense out there that people wanted this Taylor project to fail. And it's just like, no, you know what? This song's too good. You're just going to have to like it.
Couldn't deny it.
And I think it is interesting. I mean, she has quietly overcome a lot of that, I think. And I think we'll maybe when she comes out and does interviews with the next cycle, we'll get more of a sense of this. But the tour was a total triumph. Kanye had a terrible year and flamed out even as she kind of remained an even keel. And so it's interesting like where the public perception of Taylor is, you know.
And I think that kind of speaks to the year in pop overall, where it's like the projects that we got, the singles that we got, the moments that we got from different pop buyers this year were really so completely a 180 from anything we expected from them. I think from Taylor, Delicate feels so different than what people were expecting Reputation to be when we first heard Look What You Made Me Do, and even just kind of the branding of the era last year and what we ended up getting with Delicate kind of being this long hit over the course of 2018. And yeah, I mean, just from the success of the tour and kind of her speaking out on politics, I mean, everything that we got from this year, no one would have called for Taylor.
And in terms of the theme that we were talking about before with female pop stars and self-care and self-acceptance, and that's the album that she made at a time when the narrative people were expecting was a very different kind of album, and that she actually did a song about sort of, you know, stepping away from self-destructive aspects of your life and really building on things that are positive in your life, that was a theme that, you know, that she's explored in a lot of her songs over the years, but that was really sort of the dominant theme of this record, and that she, you know, her influence was everywhere this year.
Yeah.
I wonder if in general the very real dominance of hip hop on the charts has in some ways freed pop artists to try things that are kind of wildly different, because just sort of going with it's not clear if they wanted to go with the flow, what the flow would be other than to basically make a hip hop song, you know, or just heavily feature. So it just is allowed things as, you know, as weird as what Camila Cabello has tried, and just maybe it's been a good thing for pop musically, if not commercially.
Yeah, because I think it's so obvious when pop artists are trying to hop on trends and trying to hop on, because it's moving so quickly. I mean, like, I don't want to hear a Taylor Swift SoundCloud rap song. Like, she's not going to do that. She's not going to try to make that. Ariana Grande is not going to make, you know, a song with, I don't know, just like Lil Peep or not Lil Peep, but like Lil Pump. And like, you know, you're not going to like work with
these
people.
She's definitely not going to make a song
with Lil Pump. It's so obvious that they're trying to hop on these trends that I think, and the trends are moving so rapidly and they're so different than everything else that comes before it. So yeah, it's definitely freed them up to kind of look back or look to different influences and do things that no one would expect from them.
Yeah.
In our last few minutes here, what were your absolute favorite pop moments of 2018? You know, I will say again that Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour is probably the album I listened to most this year. And it's a lovely sort of country pop album. And for me, it was kind of the bomb that was needed in a very nasty year. And she may be one of the futures of pop, even though she's, you know, I guess her pop status is liminal. But, you know, I consider her pop. Do you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And what else? What did you guys
like? Absolutely. She also, like, it was really kind of wonderful that she spent the summer on tour with Harry Styles. Mm-hmm. And something about seeing that double bill, for some reason, that's when I think of pop in 2018, I will think of Kacey Musgraves and Harry Styles sharing a stage, playing for the same crowd, and, you know, both going way outside what they've done before stylistically, and really reaching out and experimenting and finding that common ground with a, you know, very enthusiastic audience.
Yeah.
And in a way, Harry and Kacey going on stage together to duet on a Shania Twain song is sort of sums up 2018 for me.
Oh, I'm so bummed I missed that. Which Shania Twain song was
You're
it?
You're Still the One.
Of course.
Beautiful.
Cried Like a Baby. Cried Like a Baby.
And just, I was going to ask, like, just a couple pop highlights for the year for you.
Other than Pete Ariana as couple of the year, I love the Rita Ora singles and album. That was another pop surprise that I did not expect to end the year with a Rita Ora album, period, but also that I loved. And I mean, we obviously had spent another episode talking about it, but A Star Is Born is,
oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
I mean, probably my favorite album of the year and of my life.
Yeah, we should say it was a huge year for Lady Gaga, but we just didn't talk much about her because we just did A Star Is Born episode. But yeah, a great unexpected.
Another 180 turn from a pop star.
Yeah, exactly. So, and another example of how, given the commercial landscape, doing stuff that's totally unexpected can really, really
full
pay off.
Full image shift.
Yeah. So, we're not sleeping on Gaga. We just did a whole episode
Never
about
sleeping
it.
On Rob? Gaga.
And Hayley Kiyoko is such a fascinating story all year. And somebody, again, like coming in with a past who could have repeated herself, chose very much not to repeat herself, chose to do stuff that, as far as I know, nobody has done this kind of, you know, 180 before. As Brittany said, that really is what pop stars did this year, was just to stay vital and current, they had to do total 180s. So Hayley, instead of relying on what she did in the past, you know, Curious, such a I think, a defining song of 2018.
Well, and what should we hear from her?
I think Curious.
I'm just curious. Is it serious? I'm just curious. Is it serious? Calling me up so late at night. Are we just friends?
When she sang with Taylor at Foxborough, when she came out on stage to sing that together.
And a lot of great queer pop artists that we've seen really rise to the top, that Troy and Hayley, I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. And Hayley totally leading the way, and also like coming from, you know, a kiddie TV past and becoming, you know, very much a teen pop star, moving into adulthood and taking her teen pop past with her, like in a really explicitly queer identified way. Mm-hmm. As she said, it was 2018.
Yep.
Indeed. And with that, this has been today's Rolling Stone Music Now. Thanks to Rob Sheffield and Brittany Spanos. We'll be back next week here on SiriusXM's Volume, Channel 106. In the meantime, we are a podcast. Download us as a podcast. Subscribe to us as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Check out all the back episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.